Hi folks, it's time for another Edu Chat, and I'm very, very pleased to have Lee Hauser from Queensland, from Distance Education Queensland with me, all the way in the northern part of Queensland called Cairns. How are you, Lee?
Good, thanks, Tim.
Lee,
how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And I'm wearing a jumper, and I notice that you're not.
No, it's about 30 degrees today. Fabulous weather.
We are feeling very jealous here in Melbourne. This time of year, it is just beautiful up where you are. It's probably the best time of year, really.
Yeah, it is. Much better than the summer.
That's great. Now, Lee, tell us about what you do in Queensland.
I'm based at Cairns School of Distance Education. I've been there for since 2009. I'm currently head of department for design and digital technologies in year 6 to 12 and head of our community engagement program from prep through to year 12. So that involves us organising all of our inreach and outreach face-to-face programs with our distance education students. So, and prior to that, I was head of e-learning for 8 years.
How big is your region, Lee?
Our region covers right up the tip to the Torres Strait Islands, down south to Cardwell, across to Normanton and up, but we also now have a lot of students travelling overseas. We have a lot of professional dance students, medical enrolments, mainstream school. They're geographically isolated students, which used to be our main cohort of students, and now probably down to about 30%, but our school is huge. We have over 1,500 students.
Wow. I imagine you cover every one of them every day.
We do. A lot of our students opt into coming to our face-to-face lessons, which are online, and some students work at their own pace. So it is wide and varied, which means the way we deliver lessons does vary depending on the cohorts of students. So, yeah, the students are all over the place. Yeah.
So you have been doing distance learning for quite a long time, whereas a lot of teachers, this is their first experiences with it. So we can really tap into your experience and your wisdom with this interview. Now, before we start doing that, Lee, behind you are some medals, and I'm very, very impressed with how many medals there are. Can you tell us a bit about what those medals are for?
They're my running medals. So about 3.5 years ago, I decided it was time to get fit and healthy and lose 18 kilos or what. So I started running. So my first race was a 5K, and that was a very, very slow effort. Since then, I've managed, last year was my best effort. I did 6 half marathons in a year. So I just find running is really, really good for my mental health. So, and I enjoy it. It's great community events up until it's kind of put a bit, this COVID-19's put a little bit of a halt on our group training programs, but still lucky enough to be able to go out and run with one other. So, yeah.
So you've achieved all of those medals in just 3 years. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Very impressed. So how long have you been part of the Adobe Education Leadership Community?
I first stumbled across Adobe when I was teaching up in Caranda. And around about 2007, I found the Education Exchange and joined in. Loved what they had to offer, so I started to do a few courses, did the Adobe Education Trainer course, became a campus leader in about 2010. And for about the last 6 years, I've been part of the Adobe leadership community, which I found for me has been, I've just learnt so much around that. And a lot of that informed, what I learnt from there informed the ways that I did my online lesson creation and delivery. So, yeah, it's been really good. Great community to be involved in, great support.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's always great to connect with them as regularly as I do. What impact has COVID-19 isolation policies had on your work and your life?
For me, I guess, as I said, mentioned before, personally, it's the social aspect, which is really difficult, being a very social person, being part of a running group and things like that. That's been a little tricky and challenging. But I guess on the positives, I've learnt to appreciate spending a bit more time by myself, which has been good. For work-wise, being a distance education teacher, I pretty much sit in a cubicle most of the day and deliver my lessons, but I've been working from home since the end of last term. We do have a huge staff at our school, so we do have individual cubicles about 1.5 metres in width there. it's not that, it's just the shared spaces at work. So a lot of staff have opted to work from home to ensure that we can maintain that social distancing. For me, I've actually found it to be really beneficial. A lot less distraction. I've been a lot more productive, and it isn't really any different me delivering lessons and working from home with my students. The only thing I really had to change around was like our face-to-face meetings with the team that I line manage and with my bosses, but we do those via Skype for Business, because that's currently one of the only platforms we're allowed to use for meetings. But Microsoft Teams is coming, is being opened up over the next couple of weeks, so that's something we'll move towards. Our lessons are still maintained on Blackboard Collaborate, which is the department's preferred model that we use. So yeah, no, everything's online. I've got a really good setup at home, so other than working from home, not much else has changed as far as that's concerned.
So Blackboard Collaborate is your main asynchronous tool. What about a synchronous tool in terms of communicating in real time, live with students? What do you use for that?
That actually has been one of the major disruptions too, because those students we can contact, we tend to have regular contact with them via phone. But given staff working from home, we're not allowed to use personal devices to contact our students. We can't use Skype for Business with students. It's only available for staff. So we're currently having to we email basically using that as a primary means of communication. If we need to talk to kids, we're scheduling times in our Collaborate sessions, jump in and give them one-on-one tutorials. But we're hoping that in the next few weeks, with Teams being available to students, that can be a bit more of a quicker way to be dealing with students. But that has proven a little bit tricky.
So Microsoft Teams is a relatively new product then, is it, for distance ed?
For Education Queensland, I think it's been fast-tracked and been unlocked given the COVID-19 situation, because they're having that issue, and mainstream schools are no different. You know, it's even harder for them to communicate with their students because we already have things in place. So yeah, Microsoft Teams, hopefully we're trialing with staff now, but we're hoping that will be a really good way to get our kids in, because you can be open in there all the time, get the kids to jump in and talk with them as they need it. Whereas the current sort of older model with Collaborate, we have to schedule a time, jump in the session and talk to them. So yeah, we'll see how that pans out over the next couple of weeks, because the working from home thing is going on to week 5, and then it's going to be reassessed from there.
Do you see Microsoft Teams as a tool that you might be using in the future then for distance ed?
I would say so. We're still not 100% sure. I mean, I'm not even sure about how long Blackboard Collaborate's going to work, because the department's currently undergoing, they're going out to market to have a look at what some other options are, and we're not sure what's going to happen down the track. But I guess at the moment, it's not about introducing new things. It's about trying to survive with what's familiar with our students. But we will trial this, and I'm hoping that the Microsoft Teams proves to be a lot better for communication.
With synchronous and asynchronous, it seems as though most of your connection with your students is in an asynchronous mode, so it's not actually happening live. We're finding that a lot of teachers that I'm talking to around the country are doing a mix of synchronous and asynchronous. In an ideal world, Lee, as an experienced distance education educator, what do you see as the perfect model in terms of a mix between synchronous and asynchronous?
It's really hard to get that and pin that down, because as I said, for us, our students are used to this. So I have a Year 7 Digital Technologies class. They come into me and have one lesson a week and one tutorial a week. So we do that live. And then I'm there to support them in between. All the materials are in the Blackboard course. We have a work rate calendar, so the students know exactly what's due when, what work they have to do for the entire week, and that's across every subject. I think getting the balance right, and the key thing is making sure that students know what's expected of them and how to organise their time. That's a huge thing, because the students are used to being in a mainstream class. The teacher's there, the bell goes, they come into class, everything, they're told as they go along. With distance ed, sometimes I won't hear or speak to a student for weeks and weeks, and all of a sudden all their work will be submitted, or they'll say, can I have a hand for something? So for us, it depends on the students, and they can be from extremely independent to needing a lot of support, which is no different than a mainstream school, I guess. So I think one of the key things is kids can't spend 9 to 3 on a computer all day, so you can't just shift a mainstream model to an online model, and that was what sort of came up. We had the Department of Education towards the end of last term in a little bit of a panic as to how mainstream schools were going to shift towards that. So I think, yeah, one of the key things is just, as I said, making sure that you don't leap into it. And if it needs to take a week or two for you to work out what the best model for you is and what's going to work with your students, then I think that pre-planning is something that's really vitally important.
Lee, please tell me that you, as an experienced distance education educator, and your colleagues in Queensland Distance Education have been inundated with requests for advice and help from mainstream teachers around the state. Has that been happening?
It was actually really interesting because I don't think people knew where this was going to go and what was actually going to happen. So, you know, people are like, oh, no, we'll be good, it's all fine. And then when they called the last week of last term as a student free week and they said students weren't coming in and it was looking like it was going to be, when they first thought it was going to be a couple of weeks, it was like, okay, you know, we can work with that, it's not a big drama. But when it was announced that the first 5 weeks of this term were going to be no students unless, they had to come to school because their parents were working in vital jobs, it was like, we need to do something because the kids can't lose 5 weeks of school. So we had people from the department coming in and saying, all right, so looking at what our model was, how we did it, how could we help other schools? What could we offer them? How, and the question you asked me before, you know, what's good practice? What do schools do? And so it was really interesting because they came in and said, well, you guys have got online materials and workbooks and things that you can just send out to the kids. And it's like, you can't just send these out to students to fill in. There's teaching behind these programs. And this was mainly the primaries that were seeking advice. I just think generally the secondary teachers, with the students being a bit older and probably a bit more used to the online learning, weren't as panicky. And probably a lot of them had skills to be able to deliver online lessons. So one big issue too was equity and access to digital devices, because there's a lot of schools up here, as anywhere, that are low socioeconomic schools, and a lot of the students don't have access to any digital technologies, internet, nothing at home. So a lot of schools have opted for paper-based options, whereby they, you know, create student pickup. They can pick up a box of work to do for a few weeks and they're sending them home, and where possible, the teachers will get online for a session in the morning and tell the kids what they need to do. They're even using Facebook, I guess, in the morning. Some schools I've noticed up here to tell students, this is, you know, make sure you do this work and this is what you need to do. But yeah, it was quite different. So a lot of schools are approaching it differently. Those schools who can have been delivering online. But what I did notice, and I spoke to someone from a local school on Friday, they haven't jumped into the online space yet, and this is week three coming up. What they've done is they've tried to get the teachers trained up, work out how they're going to do this, and do partially online, but the rest of it is with booklets. But we also provided them with access to all of our online courses. So we copied all of our Blackboard courses across and made them available to any school that wanted them, so they can use those. And yep, but I'm doing some more training next week with how to deliver effective online lessons.
Well, so not only are you doing your normal teaching, but you're also have got this extra layer of work on top of it, doing a lot of extra professional learning. So congratulations on being up there and doing so much work at this stage. I'm sure it's going to be very helpful for not just your colleagues in the Education Queensland, but also around the state with your students too. Another question for you, Lee, what key advice do you have for those who are doing distance education for the first time? So what would be your main tips and tricks or things that people should really be checking that they're doing properly?
Okay, so I said don't expect you can shift a mainstream class into an online learning environment and have kids sitting on the computer from 9 to 3. It just doesn't work. So I guess, you know, being organised and realising how long, and depending on the age group of students too, that's really vital. So your younger students are not going to be able to spend as long online. So I think it's get your point across, what the kids need to do. Teach the key concepts, make it short, sharp and sweet. Send the kids off to do their independent work and check back on them regularly. So we're making sure our online classrooms are open pretty much most of the day. And if students need to, they can pop in and get some support. But communication is the key thing, and making sure that if parents or students aren't coping with it, that they need to be feeding that to you as well. And we're introducing a lot of mindfulness and well-being check-ins with our students too, and our staff, because a lot of our staff, I'm finding too, are quite stressed by this. So I have regular Skype meetings with my staff to make sure that, you know, that they're coping and they're okay.
Yeah, it's a big change. With the actual teaching, would you be recommending that teachers do a lot of pre-recorded videos?
Yeah, and that's a lot of the way that we work with our courses too. So doing, Adobe Captivate sessions, screencasts, those sorts of things, and having them available for students to go back on and work at their own pace. Because, I mean, you can get some, I've said to some classes and schools, they've got up to, 30 in their mainstream class. I have 27 in my online course, and that's a lot of students to have in a lesson. So even if you're, streamline the numbers where possible, but just not getting to spend too much time there. So that's one of the things, key is organisation. And if you can get a lot of pre-learning done with screencasts and things, so the kids can watch that prior to your lesson, which is what we do. And then when the kids come in, you're discussing the things that they're just not sure of, and you're working through in a tutorial way. So yeah.
You mentioned Adobe Captivate. The final question is, what two Adobe apps, and I think you have three for us.
So what? I do have three. Sorry, I couldn't streamline it to two.
So what three Adobe apps?
Adobe Captivate. Yep. And is a tool that we've used for quite a... Sorry.
Sorry, Lee. I'll just ask the question in its entirety for the listeners. So, yep. What three Adobe apps have you found most helpful recently?
Okay, well, these are recently, but also we have been using these for quite a while. So Adobe Captivate's one we've used more often now, given that we can create some pre-learning materials prior to lessons. So we can do screencasts with that. We can pop questions in there for kids to check understanding. So that has been a real godsend for us to be able to use. And the others are Adobe Scan, because getting students to get their work back to you is a huge challenge. I don't know how many times I've had parents, well-intentioned, good meaning, send me photos embedded into a Word document and said, here's my kid's work. So you sit there and you painstakingly take things out, and we can turn them into PDFs. But I just said to the family, if you guys can put the Adobe Scan app on your smart device, scan the student's work, send it back, it's fantastic, because we can just pick it up really quickly and use our, not necessarily in order, but our other favourite app, which is Acrobat DC. As a distance ed, we could not be without that, giving our students feedback and doing digital marking. I use that pretty much all day, every day. So those three apps have been the ones that have been absolutely key to us. Of course, we use the rest of the Adobe apps for digital technologies and visual arts subjects, but across the entire school from prep through to year 12, they're the three apps that we are using all the time.
There you go. That's great. And of course, Adobe Captivate is currently free for 90 days. So that's a good tip for teachers to take advantage of that if they want to get to know it. You've got 90 days of access for free with Adobe Captivate. It takes a little bit of learning with Captivate, but once you've got your head around it, it's a very valuable tool. That's great advice, Lee. Lee, is there anything else you wanted to share with the educators who will be listening to this from all over the world?
Just with the Adobe Captivate, there's a lot of excellent resources on the Adobe Education Exchange, and that's a place that I learned how to use that fairly well. So that was, that was really, really good. So, look, I guess this is new for everybody, and just ask people for help. I mean, there's amazing communities out there, and people are more than willing to lend a hand with their expertise and advice. So, yeah.
And what I'm finding is that more and more teachers are saying, I've just learned some new skills that I think I will be applying even when we go back face to face. And that really warms my heart to think that this, as much of a pain that it has been, it's been a real catalyst to a lot of change and a lot of learning for educators. And hopefully we'll have a more of a blended learning approach with a lot more digital technology, literacy and creativity right across the board. Time will tell, Lee.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think you hit it spot on, and I really do believe, I don't think we're going to ever go back to what we had before. And you're right, I think it's fabulous. It's good opportunity for everyone to get creative and sit back and have a look at how we can do things better.
Yeah, I'll never forget one teacher saying to me, my year nine boys, they're amazing. I never realized just what wonderful learners they are, because when they're together face to face, they're absolute mongrels. So it's, I think she wants to have online learning for her year nine boys as compulsory for every year now, but I'm not sure if that'll happen.
And if you do it well, you don't have behaviours to deal with, absolutely. And this is the kids. You know, the kids are the digital ones who are engaged in it. I think the challenge is a lot more for the teachers than the kids.
Yeah.
And the parents.
Yeah, lots of learning for everybody. Well, Lee, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. And when's your next marathon, your next half marathon planned?
I did a full marathon on the weekend. I divided up into two chunks. So I did 42.2 on Friday night and Saturday morning. The next one I was supposed to be doing was in Germany in September, but that's not going to happen. So I guess I'll just keep doing a few virtual ones around Cairns and then we'll wait and see. But I tell you, as soon as everything's lifted and I can get out to go and do one somewhere, I'm going to go do one somewhere exotic and exciting. I haven't done one in Melbourne, my hometown, yet, so I'll have to pop down and do that.
Well, it's been inspiring to listen to you, Lee. You're an amazing educator and you're obviously an amazing athlete as well. So thank you very much for your time.
I'm not fast, but I get it done.
Good. Well, those medals are a tribute to you. For those watching the podcast, how many medals are behind you right now? Have you counted them or have you lost track?
No, I've lost track. I have to put a, I said my husband needs to put another level up because I have to keep going some more. No, I'm not sure.
Well, for those listening to the podcast, there are a lot of medals there behind her. Lee, thank you so much for your time. It is much appreciated.
Thank you, Tim. Lovely as always to catch up. I appreciate it. And thanks for supporting everybody in this difficult time. So
terrific. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.